M9. Number 2A.
Well, we had to stop just there where I was trying to show that a specific error has to be dealt with a specific scientific truth. And we were saying, say, for instance, if an organ is not functioning harmoniously, one could think, well, that means that we have to deal with it through the divine mind, because the idea of mind is that it is the all action, the harmonious action, frictionless action, rhythmic action, and so on. But that would just be a guess, because this, the cause really of this false functioning of an organ, could be something very different. For instance, it could be just fear. Well, if that false functioning is caused by fear, then naturally we would have to deal with it through love, because love casts out all fear. And I wouldn't deal with it through mind. Or it could be that it is the outcome of a sense of frustration. Well, if it is an outcome of a sense of frustration, I would deal with it, say, through life, the newness of life, the multiplication of life, the highway of life. Or it may be that it is the outcome of a sense of dissatisfaction in life. Well, then naturally I would deal with it through soul. Soul that satisfies, that is always satisfied and rejoices. And so you can see that in order to deal properly with a specific error, we would have to find also the specific truth about it. So that if we had to deal with such a case, say, which has been caused by dissatisfaction, it would be in vain to deal with it through mind, because only soul is the fact about the error called dissatisfaction. So we see first that our practice should be scientific and not in a haphazard way. That therefore our practice should include a method which reveals to us the governing error in the patient's mind. Now, this indicates something which we should keep in mind very definitely, namely that we should never go out from the problem in order to find the truth about the governing error. See, if I go just out from the problem, say, the false functioning of some of my organs, then I go out from an organ, from the false functioning. I don't go out from God. I go to the error and ask the error about the truth, but the error can never tell the truth. So let us be clear that in the scientific practice we never go out from the problem and try to deduce from the problem and try to find the truth by deducing from the problem. The problem is always a manifestation of a belief, of an error. And error never reveals truth. Only God, truth, could reveal error. Therefore, we also see that a diagnosis in most cases is just of no use. Even from a medical point of view, a diagnosis is of no use. Medical science today is very skeptical about medical diagnosis. We know how the doctor is not able really to diagnose a case certainly. He just can't do it. And we know of too many statistics showing that really the diagnoses were wrong in many cases. Even, say, if the medical faculty would be able to find a method how to diagnose a case rightly and give to that disease the proper name, what would we have achieved? Nothing at all. Because, as you know, even from the standpoint of the psychosomatic medicine, they would say it isn't really the name of disease which we have to know, but the underlying psychological error. So the physical problem doesn't yet reveal the underlying false mentality. Also, medical science says really we can't classify diseases properly. Each case is different. A heart disease is just not a heart disease. It's just one out of a few hundred possibilities of heart disease. And not one case is equal to the other. So that they also see that the cause of disease is not revealed by defining the disease. They too may say that an ulcer,
Ulcer.
That an ulcer, say, may be the manifestation of anger, but it also may be the manifestation, say, of a hereditary belief. It may be the manifestation of, say, suppression of desires. It may be the manifestation of mental contagion. See, that patient may have lived in a family or in a surrounding where everybody was always talking about ulcers and ulcers and ulcers, and so gets mental contagion. It can also be just a belief as such, because in the general atmosphere, as a general belief, there is established the possibility that there are such things as ulcers. So you can see that even if we could diagnose a case from the medical point of view correctly, we wouldn't have found an answer. It's still necessary to uncover the error that caused this disease. So, in the Christian Science practice, we have to be aware, really, that we are not trying to find some recipes for healing various kinds of disease, as you so often hear. Because, say, we see now that there is not a definite, unmistakable relationship between a certain case of disease and a certain name of mental disorder. Say, if somebody worries and worries and worries all his life, that may manifest itself in various forms of disease, not just in one form of disease, not just, say, in gallstones. It can also manifest itself in ulcers, or in a cancer, or in blood disease, or in poisoning, or anything like that. So there is not a definite relationship between a form of mental disorder, of a mortal phase of consciousness, and a certain form of disease. Therefore, if one has, say, heart trouble, we cannot say always, well, that comes from this or that false state of consciousness. And if somebody has liver disease, we just say, well, this comes from this and that state of consciousness. And if somebody else has TB, just to say, well, that is the effect of this and that state of consciousness, and in such a way, so to say, have a book of recipes for healing various kinds of sickness. It's a pity to see that many practitioners work on such a basis, that when they are face to face with a case which has a certain name, which, by the way, he not even knows if it's true, because, say, a patient comes along and says, you know, I have gallstones. Well, who tells that the patient really knows that he has gallstones? Patient comes and says, I have a heart disease. Who told the patient that he has heart disease? That it is not just the nerve. If a medically trained man, a doctor, has lots of difficulties in analyzing properly a disease, how can a layman analyze it? It's just not possible. But that's what the patient usually does. He likes to give a name to his disease. And then with that name, goes to a practitioner. And if the practitioner is not awake, he says, oh yes, you have gallstones. Well, I have had a case like this some years ago, and I healed it this and this way. And he starts right in to treat that case in that and that way, which he or she was dealing with a few years ago. And in talking to practitioners, you find that so often, that they have their recipe book, so to say. Their formula too, you see, where they just have laid down that mortal law. But that is not scientific practice. You see, we should really go out from the Infinite One and see that the Infinite One never repeats itself. Even in true being, there is no repetition. The infinite is infinite, and therefore is always new, and so never repeats itself. Any disease is a counterfeit of the infinite. And as the infinite never repeats itself, so error in this way never repeats itself. It's always a different claim. It's always a manifestation of a different combination of mortal consciousness and of mortal concepts. And so really in the Christian Science practice we can never fall back, so to say, to earlier cases, to similar cases. Fall back to ask a practitioner to look up in the journal, in the healings of the journal, what was the thought with which such and such a case was healed. We should always let new inspiration, the divine truth, reveal to us what is the governing error. Let truth uncover error in its own way. This is the way, really, we should approach any case. And only in that way, really, we handle the case divinely and Christianly, and not by human guesswork, trying to make deductions from the body, from the disease. You see, Mrs. Eddy says about healing and the recipe for all healing. She says, the Bible contains the recipe for all healing. So there is a recipe, but we will see it is a general recipe. Namely, she says, the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. She quotes here from Revelation. Sin and sickness, she says, are both healed by the same principle. See, every sort of sin plus every sort of sickness is healed by the same principle, by the one principle. This is the only recipe she gives. There are not hundreds and thousands of recipes where to each name of disease belongs a certain defined state of mortal consciousness. She says, the tree is typical for man's divine principle. Offering full salvation from sin, sickness and death. See, she says the recipe is given in the Bible. Namely, it says the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. The leaves of the tree. The tree, she says, is the divine principle of man. The leaves are the ideas of principle. The leaf stands for the idea of this tree, of this principle. And so the only recipe which the Bible gives is the scientific recipe. Namely, that it states that the healing comes from the divine principle, healing through its leaves, healing through principles, ideas. And that alone offers full salvation from sin, sickness, and death. So, after having now considered various points about healing, we could now ask, what then is this principle of treatment? What is now this principle, and what is the divine method of treatment? How then can we know the governing error that makes the body sick? If the disease cannot give us an answer, if mortal consciousness cannot reveal the truth, how then can we know what is the specific error about a specific truth? And so we can come perhaps to the following method of treatment. First of all, therefore, we have to see that the problem we have to deal with is a lie. That's the first thing we know. And therefore that every problem is just a phenomena of mortal mind or of the carnal mind. That it isn't a thing as such, that it is only the outward manifestation of mortal mind. So that the only patient and the only disease, really, with which we have to deal is mortal mind, the carnal mind. And so it is well right at the beginning, you see, to be aware that we are not dealing with what the patient thinks he's suffering of, and take his analysis of the case as true, as something real, as really to be the case. The only case we have to deal is always mortal consciousness, mortal mind. And so whatever the patient tells us, let us see that it's always the same stuff, always mortal mind. Consequently, we should not draw any conclusion from what the patient says or from how the case looks like. But if we are really scientific practitioners, we take this case, whatever form or name it has, and put it right behind us, put it right away out of sight, just by knowing that it is anyway but mortal mind, and nothing more than that. See, Mrs. Eddy would say, look away from the body into truth and love, the divine principle of all happiness, harmony, and immortality. She doesn't say, look at the problem, discuss at length the name and the form and the duration of the problem. No, she said, make as little of it as possible, but be aware that it is just mortal mind. And therefore, it is no use constantly to talk about this case, to name the name of the disease, to be until one gets mesmerized about everything that this disease suggests to us. that it is harmful, that it is fatal, that it takes so and so long to heal it, and so on, and so on, and so on. These are all the lies of mortal mind. So look away from the body into truth and love. Well, this is the first step we have to do, to put that whole thing just behind us as mortal mind. Then, we can't leave it at that. We can't leave it in a neutral state. Healing must always be positive. So what we do is, as a second step, we turn to God. We look into truth and love. We turn to God and begin to fill our consciousness with the perfection of God, with perfect God and perfect man. Then we begin to reason from principle, how principle looks at men. And so we begin to commune devotedly, conscientiously, lovingly, rejoicefully with the one God. Commune with the fact that really man is the idea of God. And we begin to establish the true fact about men, the true identity about men. And perhaps you sit back and you begin to see what this true identity of men is. How man, as the idea of mind, is an idea of power, of action, of law, that is an idea of intelligence, wisdom, that he is an idea of being guided and led infinitely in a wise way. You begin to realize that man, and the truth about man is that he is an idea of spirit, and therefore that man lives and moves in the realm of spiritual ideas. Therefore that man really moves in the realm of unfoldment, of progress, of true substance, of an unchangeable spiritual substance, that man lives and moves really in the realm of reality, purity, of true birth. On you go on perhaps and you commune silently, happily, consciously with the one God and see that man is the idea of soul and therefore lives and moves and has his being in the realm of sinlessness, of true identity, where he is unchangeable in his harmony, untouched by mortal sense, where man is balanced, joyful, happy, free. Then perhaps you go on to principle and you begin to realize the true identity of man. That man, as the idea of principle, lives and moves in the realm of true government, of true system, of true science, where he is governed absolutely, imperatively, harmoniously. If we begin go further perhaps and see that the true man which I have to deal with is the idea of life, and therefore always moves in the realm of true existence, of true being, of fulfillment, of fullness, of provision, that is always God maintained, God supplied, God supported, God invigorated, that he always is exalted above every disharmony, that he is eternal, timeless, ageless, without decay, without beginning, without end, always exalted as a divine idea. And so perhaps you commune with God and you begin to realize that the only man that there exists is the man as the idea of truth, which lives in the realm of health, of wholeness, in the realm of divine consciousness, where he's divinely conscious of his true manhood, of his whole manhood, where he has dominion over everything. And so finally perhaps we begin to realize that all that there is true about man is that he lives and moves in the realm of love. Therefore that everything which is true about man is always complete, is always fulfilled, is always infinitely established, that man lives in the divine design of God, in the divine plan of God, in the infinite digest of God, where he is cared for and protected and loved by God. And so, you see, you turn to the true sense of man. And we establish now in consciousness, really, what is true about the patient. Namely, man as the idea of God. And we can know that this man knows that he is that man of God. That he is absolutely, definitely aware of his true manhood, conscious of his wholeness and of being in the image and likeness of God. And so we affirm in our consciousness that man is conscious of his divine inheritance. Now, as we commune with this one God in this understanding way, in this scientific understanding way, where we have a scientific understanding of man as the idea of mind and of spirit and of soul and of principle and life and truth and love, and as we commune with that fact, then something begins to happen. And so a third phase, so to say, comes into action. Namely, we have seen that every truth reveals its counterfeit. That whenever we know the truth, that truth is the Christ, the Savior to a situation. And so, by turning to the one God, God gifts us his spiritual idea. Because God is love, God wants to help, to heal, and to save. And so, suddenly, that truth begins to operate within us as a revelation of the true identity and the specific identity of that case. Something in us begins to talk to us, to move into us, to move us, and form the true definition of what is the matter. The true idea begins to reveal to us the specific truth. Because God has a Christ, that Christ is always revealing to us the divine ideal. The divine ideal about any situation. And so suddenly our treatment becomes specific. Suddenly something begins to become aware within us and be convinced about it within us that we have to deal with this and that claim. So you can see, really, that this Christ idea begins to analyze the problem, the case. Begins through truth's own way to uncover the governing error which needs to be destroyed in the patient's mind. And so when it is uncovered, we can deal with it in a specific way so as to destroy that specific claim. Then, really, the 5 times 5 equals 25 begins to deal with the 5 times equal 26. The specific truth begins to deal with a specific error. And so you begin to realize, finally, as a fourth phase, that science applies itself. That it isn't so that we can apply truth to error. So often we hear in the discussion in Christian Science that we should apply truth. And this is a very dangerous statement. We may mean something right, but mostly when we analyze it, they mean something wrong. Because, first of all, we must see that Mrs. Eddy uses the term apply and application in regard to sickness very seldom. And she never uses it in the way that we can apply truth. If we could apply truth, we would have to be bigger than truth, because only the lesser obeys the greater. So if we could apply truth, really, then we would have to be bigger than truth. But we aren't. So we must see that truth applies itself. That all that is going on is God and His idea. And that the only power of demonstration lies in God and never within us. Mrs. Eddy would say in regard to apply, she says, the scientist's demonstration rests on one principle. Let this principle be applied to the cure of disease. It's the principle that is applied. Well, how on earth is that principle applied? Well, the principle says, I'm the Word, I'm the Christ. I am Christianity. I am science. Therefore, it means that the application of the principle is then when we turn to the principle as the saving power, when we subordinate ourselves to that principle, then that principle has the Christ in itself and applies itself and manifests itself. And so by sticking to that principle, really, that principle begins to apply itself and to the cure of every disease. Mrs. Eddy says, the virtue and power of truth, as applied through this Christian system of healing disease. See, the application of truth is always through the Christian system of healing disease. We don't apply it. Principle applies it through its own system. And so we must see more and more that in the very attitude which I have depicted as the method of treatment lies really the power of truth application to the governing error. So that we free ourselves from that strain where we think, I have to demonstrate this and this. It's up to me that I have to demonstrate this and this. As if in me, in us, would be the saving power. Already Paul showed that the saving power is in God and His Christ. And that we have to let that God and that Christ work out things in its own way. Let truth uncover error in its own way. Let truth destroy error in its own way. So all what we have to do is to put ourselves out of the way. That perhaps is what we can do as application. To put ourselves out of the way so that the Word of God can work harmoniously, unrestrictedly, unopposed through His Christ. Work through His Christ, really, to analyze the error, uncover the error, and destroy the error in truth's own way.